Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 288. Continuing our positional recaps of the 2025 fantasy baseball season. Infield done. Head into the outfield, part one. We'll start with the first pick, according to ADP. Probably go 20 to 30 picks by 25 picks. Pick it up next episode with part two. So we'll see how far we get tonight. We'll cover a bunch of outfielders. We have some listener questions from the Discord as well. And enjoy the outfield position for a couple episodes, kind of getting rid of that poor taste in our mouth from third base. Before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter, at BTheIntric, the podcast, at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon, at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter, at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
I'm good. Some fun chatter with you before the show, looking at your stack of papers that you had from previous episodes. Just unbelievable what you've got going on over there at your desk. Excited, man. We're 2 weeks out from Bubba and the Bloom Invitational. Got a bunch of fun stuff planned for that. Halfway done with the forecaster-ish.
That's awesome.
Kind of done through, finished mostly with batter boxes, starting on pitcher boxes now. And yeah, man, busy time of year, but it's always fun.
Yep. Never stops. Can't stop, won't stop. So that's the beauty in this world. You're going hard, and mine begins next week now that work has finally hit the skids and my golf tournament days are over. So that begins here. And
now that we can get you off the golf course.
You're not going to get me off the golf course. As I said, my tournament days are over. There's a difference.
Your tournament days. Okay.
Yes. I still got some more reps to get in before Dobson Ranch in a couple of weeks.
More reps. Okay.
But yeah, we got that going for us. And yeah, the chatter before the show about first pitch Arizona, all things first pitch Arizona, was pretty fun. A lot of excitement. It feels like it should be next week, but it's like 2 weeks away. So close, yet so far, as we get ramping up for that one. But we'll talk about that plenty when it takes place. We'll recap it and talk too much about it again and tell you guys how much you need to book it for next year later. Let's talk outfield, Ryan. Let's get to the outfield, because we're not talking, World Series yet. We're going to skip that unless you want to make a prediction.
We've had enough of my Mariners, cry session. So
he's already got the Oregon Duck green on. He's moved on. He's ready to pound Wisconsin this weekend in his Grateful Dead gear. So
I still got my Julio Funko here. We're good there.
There you go.
Your boys are coming up to Eugene this weekend.
It's gonna be bad. It's gonna be real bad.
I think Wisconsin's 35 point underdogs.
You guys should cover that spread. Maybe I'll go to my underdog app and check it out.
Me too. In there, our prediction market, I think we're supposed to call it.
Prediction market. I'm going to go check team predictions. I'm going to go check that one out and see how it looks for that game, because Wisconsin's really bad, and any team rolling out that Grateful Dead gear should.
Rolling out the Grateful Dead gear. It looks good. It's going to rain a ton. There's an atmospheric river heading to the Pacific Northwest, so that's your only shot at a cover.
Well, some of the best duck hunting takes place in
bad
weather. So you got that going for. But I just wanted to shout out that gear between the skull, Grateful Dead duck skull with a Nike swoosh. And then on the back of the helmet, basically the Grateful Dead CD logo, but with ducks. Like, there's just levels to what they did, and they knocked it out of the entire park. Because I've seen a lot of Grateful Dead gear. The Giants do like a Grateful Dead thing almost every year. They're really close with the Deadheads in San Francisco. So I've seen a lot of really cool gear. My dad's bought a lot of that gear throughout the years. What the Ducks did was pretty freaking awesome.
They know what they're doing. They make money because of it. That is for sure.
Very true. And Berksy will be there. I'm assuming he's in the chat there. He said the Wisconsin beat writer predicted Ducks 59-3. It's probably a fair prediction. I wouldn't be shocked if the Badgers.
We probably won't be calling Bloom Boards next week Wisconsin red. We'll just put it that way.
No, because I'm predicting them. Like if somehow Wisconsin wins, whew, that'd be a miracle in itself. But all right, enough of that. Let's get to the outfield. Let's talk about it. ADP, the usual. I'll let you remind people what they're looking at if they're watching on YouTube.
All right. So, yes, this is the outfield top 30 by preseason ADP. So this is the order that they were picked in by the folks who put down the cash in the NFBC main event. And yeah, everything else is pretty much the same. How they finish per the Fangraphs player rater at end of season. We'll talk about the next 30 and breakouts on our part two show on Tuesday. But that's the lay of the land here. We've got batting average, homers, and steals color-coded as well. Honestly, I haven't had a whole lot of time today to kind of look at macro level outfield. It is interesting to me, and this is kind of a common theme with a lot of the hitter positions. And I remember this was last year. Early outfield was pretty strong as well. But, you know, outside of Yordan, you know, non-Yordan Alvarez division, the top 10 picks at outfield, all but two finished in the top 20. All but Yordan Alvarez finished in the top 30 in outfield. Got a little bit shakier after that, but pretty good numbers throughout. The deceiving part, of course, always with outfield is this is not groundbreaking news, but you need to roster five of them. So everything looks hunky-dory in this top 30, but that is, if you think about it, in a 15-team league, that's your outfield one and outfield two. And even some of these guys qualify at other positions that we've already talked about on other recap shows. So it is one where you can kind of go down an outfield board and see, oh, yeah, this good. Tons of speed here. Tons of batting average there. Some power there. When you've got a roster five of them and there's 15 teams in your league, that is, by my count, 75 outfielders. Yep. It fills up fast. It fills up fast. So a lot of good on this board, outfield 1 through 30, some bad, but that's to be expected given how much you have to, how much volume you have to accumulate at outfield.
And it just reminds me of like when we do our outfield previews, I think we do three episodes for that. And then we do our pockets of ADP and everything. We always kind of said, like, especially on the outfield previews, like, okay, you want at least two in this section. By the end of this ADP, you probably want four for sure, maybe all five. Because of where drop-off starts to take place, platooning takes place. We won't get to too much of that on this episode. That's a little farther down the list. But you'll start to see all of those kind of things take place as we get deeper into probably next episode's outfield review, where it really, really stands out.
And it's good to get that context. Like the highest ADP, the latest ADP on this board for the top 30 is Dylan Cruz, who was taken at 112 ADP. So if I'm saying this is your outfield one and outfield two in a 15 teamer, you have to draft two of these outfielders in your top 100 picks, and then also get an ace, get a closer, get, you know, that it fills up quickly.
Yeah, this is seven rounds essentially of a 15 team draft. Yeah. So a lot of it adds up really quick. So it's another reason why you listen to us in a lot of shows as you're doing, you know, look at the early rounds. You want probably a shortstop somewhere early because we talked about how top heavy those are. You want an outfielder or two early because of the way things change. And like Ryan said, it's okay. Then when do you bring a starting pitcher? When do you bring X, Y, and Z into the fold? It's interesting. It's very, very interesting.
It's the old draft advice of, always get a closer, a starter, two outfielders, a catcher, and a second baseman in your first five rounds. It's like that's actually impossible.
It seems pretty simple. 4, 6, 8, 10. I'm just doing quick math in my head here. 40. We had 15 of the top 30 stole at least 20 bases. So you get a lot of steals here. If you get out of like the 15 or more steals, you got probably 2/3 of them. So you'll get your speed early. Another reason to grab them. Tons of 20 plus home run bats. Almost 80% of them, if not more, got you 20 or more home runs. Not many of them. I use the threshold like hit 250 or better. You're going to be pretty good. Obviously, there's an actual threshold out there. That's just my short, easy math in my brain. A lot of them get you 250 plus, but a lot of 20-20 type potentials early on is what you want. As we talked about other positions, Ryan, where there's either no power or there was no speed or there was neither, if we're talking like third base. So another reason why you kind of attack this position kind of early, which also, again, like beating a dead horse now is we say like you have to get so many positions filled. This is why maybe you do punt the third base position or the second base position so you can load up on these guys and then just kind of play in the pool of mediocrity elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
With that being said, let's kick things off here with the number one outfielder off the board. Number one outfielder at the end of the season, player rater, ADP of 3, because he went after Shohei and Bobby Witt Jr. That is one All Rise, Aaron Judge, who finished the season hitting 331, with 53 homers, 12 stolen bases, 137 runs. That's a career high. 114 RBIs. Just crushed everything, Ryan. It is three out of the last 4 years of 152 or more games, 50 or more homers, 122 runs, and 114 RBIs, and 10 stolen bases. He's been as consistent as they come in back-to-back years, hitting well over 300. A healthy Aaron Judge, even though he's 33, and he only had basically one and a half arms. Terrifying.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and I think this is a nice kind of one of the many reasons why I kind of use these boards to visualize this stuff. I don't think Aaron Judge gets enough credit. We don't need to spend too much time on Aaron Judge. We all know he's elite. I just don't think he gets enough credit for how much better he is than the rest of the field in batting average and home runs. Specifically last year. Like, you've got that 331 batting average and 53 homers. Nobody else in the top 30 at outfield hit over 290. The only one that hit 290 was Ronald Acuna. No one else hit 280 in the top 30 at outfield. That's a 50-point edge in batting average. I don't think we maybe, I don't know, like valuation systems do, but I like that's a massive edge on the rest of the field. And basically ditto home runs, 10 more home runs than anybody else in the field. That was Juan Soto at 43, more than 20 home runs than anyone else. So you've got a 50-point batting average edge and 20 home runs edge on the rest of the top 30 at outfield. I think it's often understated just how much better Aaron Judge is than everybody else in outfield. And I think that's, I mean, that's certainly, whoa, I turned the thing off. That's certainly why I took Aaron Judge second in the meatball draft, is because like the projections are always great on Judge. Yes, you worry about age, you worry about injury, but like, I don't know, man. When Judge is right, when Judge is good, which has been the last whatever number of years, it's so much better than the rest.
Yeah, he's light years ahead of the game. And for the longest time was, could Judge stay healthy? Well, three of the last 4 years, like I mentioned, it's 152 or more games. So he's managed to stay on the field. And when he does that, it's terrifying what he does. So it's very hard to pass it up. I just did want to remember, he'll be 34 this year. So eventually things will get nasty.
Just getting into his prime. Just about the time when I start drafting guys like Aaron
Judge. Oh, I'm not saying don't draft him like we talked about J-Ram last week. I'm just saying eventually he's going to have that year where you're like, crap. There it is. But I'm going to keep swinging for that year until it goes away.
Exactly. And I don't know. Does the elbow non-surgery concern you at all? It doesn't for me. I feel like he'd get it cleaned up if they needed to. And
that's kind of how I feel, like if it was that important, they would do something about it. They're not. They're going to let him roll. Not too concerned. And if they do something about it, he can DH, which we saw Shohei do just fine. Didn't affect anything. So not too concerned in that regard. Corbin Carroll, ADP of 6, second outfielder off the board, finished 5th at the position. And for a while, people were like, what is going on with Corbin Carroll? But he finished the year hitting 259, 31 homers, 32 stolen bases. First, it's career high homers was 25 prior to this. 32 steals after 35 last year, so maybe he's not the 50 steal guy. So maybe it's a 30 steal guy. But solid bounce back in batting average. We saw over 100 runs again, 84 RBI. Like Corbin Carroll at age 24 put together his best overall season. And weirdly enough, it was in the fewest games of the last 3 years, Ryan. And I don't like, we might not have seen the best of him just yet, which is kind of awesome to think about. But I've always been a Corbin Carroll homer, so maybe I'm too optimistic.
You have always, and you will continue to be Corbin Carroll homer. We will. You took him in your current draft that you're in, which is a 12 team draft and hold.
Yep. And NFBC 50 decided to jump in with some of the Discord folks. They're taunting me and enticing me, and they knew I was itching to draft. So I jumped at the opportunity, took him at.
Hey, I held strong. I held strong, luckily. Where'd you take him?
The 6th pick in round 1. So,
okay.
Yeah, J-Ram was off the board, went to Corbin Carroll.
So it was probably what? Judge, Ohtani, right, Witt, J-Ram.
With Ohtani, Judge, Witt, J-Ram, Soto, I got Carroll at 6.
Yeah. Okay. Which we'll talk about next. Yeah, Corbin Carroll, I you know, not too much to add here. It is interesting. I feel like Corbin Carroll is one of those guys, one of those few guys, he can kind of like turn on a switch if he wants to be a power hitter versus if he wants to be a stolen base guy. Like you mentioned, he only had 32 steals. Corbin Carroll had 22 in the second half. Like this guy could steal 50. I feel like if he wanted to in the first half, Corbin Carroll hit 20 homers with just 10 steals. Second half, 11 homers with those 22 steals. It's like, I don't know. You'd love to see both of those together at the same time, but it feels like, I don't know. Corbin Carroll could hit 30 bombs again if he wanted to, or he could hit 50 bags or something in between. He's a beast, and he is a youth. I mean, I guess he'll age 26 season next year, but
must kill you.
I'd still take him on my squad. I think it's
a good call.
Yeah,
saw his quality of contact, dude, up to 100, almost 16 max EV, 14.5% barrel after hovering in the sevens.
That's wild. Almost doubled
50% hard hit. Like, if you look at his X stats, he underachieved. Like, 250 on average, 274 XBA. Again, if you believe in those things, but like, he's just a beast at the plate.
Yeah, and remember when we were all concerned about the shoulder, like the power is gone. It's the same guy. Yeah, to double your barrel rate like that is not many hitters have a 14% barrel rate with over 600 plate appearances. And I would honestly probably argue, given that, Corbin Carroll probably should have hit more than 31 home runs in 2025.
Well, like I was looking at Savant right now. He like the last 2 years, 23 and 24, 16% and 16.6% pulled fly balls. This past year, almost 23% pulled fly balls. So a 6.5% jump from last year, which is a massive helper in the home run department, if you want to go that way.
Yep.
To add to the barrels and the hard hits, that does correlate to some serious success as well. And yeah, it was just a very, very, very good season for Corbin Carroll. All right, let's get to Mr. Juan Soto, who on this very show, people early in the season, Ryan, were like, should I move on from Juan Soto because things were so bad? The answer was always no, and he proved why. Sure, he hit 263, which is the lowest since 2022. He's used to be pretty good in the batting average department. OBP was still near 400, so you're good there. 43 bombs for a career high. 120 runs scored back-to-back years, at least 120. 105 RBIs for the third straight season of 105 or more. And the shocker of all shockers, 38 stolen bases, which he had a previous career high of 12, Ryan. 12.
Yeah.
So that's the hardest one to wrap my head around. It's never been, is Juan Soto a first-round talent? Because usually you get the average, power, all those, like at least four pretty good counting stats. It's what are we going to get at least 10 steals? Then we're golden. We got 38 this last year, Ryan. So crazy stuff. If you almost got a 40-40 Juan Soto season.
And 29 of those 38 steals are in the second half. It's like Juan Soto, it feels like, to go along with the kind of the Corbin Carroll vibe, it's like he could probably wake up and decide to steal 50-plus bags and could probably do it because that's pretty much what Juan Soto did in the second half. Selfishly, I like never draft Juan Soto, and I don't know why. I always speak of the way too patient plate approach. I speak of the lack of speed, which I think was valid before this season. And then dude comes out and goes 43-38. So you said he went top five pick in your draft and hold. That is well deserved for Juan Soto. Just a massive season, and yeah, it didn't start out great. It's funny that that's why you don't overreact to April. In April, Juan Soto hit 232 with two home runs, two steals. Hit 219 in May. Hell, he hit 210 in July. He had some slumps, but like just ride it out. And yeah, number two outfielder, you're very happy where you took Juan Soto.
Yeah, he's a 13% sprint speed, so you're not expecting much in that regard. So just to watch what he does is pretty crazy. Just looking at his Savant page at the moment, he finds a way to be quite successful on this one. Very perplexing. All right, let's get to the first what happened. And he still finished 15th at the position, which is pretty crazy to think about. And that's Kyle Tucker. Another year of, oh, he played hurt for a while with like a fractured hand. Awesome. Kyle Tucker played 136 games, which is up from 78, obviously, but still not what you want from Kyle Tucker. He hit 266, 22 and 25, so he still got you another 2020 season, but it's the same thing. He showed great skill sets once again, just can't stay healthy. Like, this is a 30-30 guy that has not been able to do it because he just can't put that full season together. It's frustrating.
I mean, he's still, Kyle Tucker still had 595 plate appearances. Like, he still has. But
so many of those were while he was hurt, and he sucked. Know, like, that was the frustrating part.
So, yes, that's a fair and valid retort. It is funny, like, in prepping, because I'm doing two of the, at first pitch, I'm doing two of the player spotlight panels, the hitters and a pitcher one. You're on the pitcher one. But I was coming up with kind of topics and players for it. And I was, for hitters, I was like, oh, I want to do kind of first round, you know, or early round faders or something, like a Mookie Betts, a Yordan type thing. And I was like, oh, I'm going to put Kyle Tucker in there. And then I look at Kyle Tucker's line and, like, yeah, it's frustrating for all the reasons you just mentioned. Was it really that bad? Guy finished 15th in outfield and missed basically all of September. Yeah. Like, it really was not that bad of a pick. Yes, it was frustrating. Yes, you probably wish he didn't play through the hand injury. Yes, you would like him to play in September, but you still got a top 15 outfielder plus whatever replacement value you could have gotten on top of that in September. So I don't know, man. I'm probably always going to be way too high on Kyle Tucker, but. Yeah, a quote-unquote down season to finish 15th at the position, go 22 homers, 25 steals, and 595 plate appearances. That's I would say that's a pretty good down season.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I was surprised he still finished 15th. Like, he still had his 2020. Good in all those regards. He'll probably look great in Dodger Blue next year. And we'll go in that. Like, I love how every major free agent's linked to the Dodgers. No. Jack, like,
no less.
Obviously. Yeah. Obviously. Like, every.
We have interest.
Yeah. Every $300 million guy that you can defer $200 million to is option A for the Dodgers. It's pretty simple. I don't need every beat reporter to put it out there. Like, if you can't figure that out by now, what have you been watching? And I agree to many. The Dodgers aren't the reason that baseball might go on strike. I'm going to say that right out the gate. It's the penny pinchers in the other spots. They are.
So. Agree, by the way, but I just want to rile you up. What would be worse, a Dodgers World Series victory this season or the Dodgers lose the World Series but then sign Kyle Tucker?
Kyle Tucker, because then I have to see him face the Giants for like probably 7 to 12 years. Okay. But I anticipate the Dodgers having a chance to win a World Series. Like, you should. With that team, you should be in the World Series every single season, and you should probably win at least half of them. Like, I've accepted that.
Yeah, disagree, yeah. But
yeah. With that pitching staff, come on. Let's be real. It's tough to beat. But all right, let's move on. The next outfielder, the fifth outfielder out the board, ADP of 13. So here we go. The first five all went in the first round. And we have two more that went technically in the first round. So the first seven outfielders had ADPs in the first round of a 15. So keep that in mind as well. Jackson Churio, fifth off the board, finished 17th at the position. Hit 270, 21-21 in 131 games. Had that hammy injury towards the end of the season that really kind of dwindled things down there for him. But in your second full season in the bigs, essentially, back-to-back 20 seasons, he hit over 270 both seasons, and he's 21 years old. I've made my thoughts very clear on this show about Jackson Churio. I actually took him with my second pick behind Corbin Carroll in that draft that I'm in right now. So I have a Carroll-Churio start, which... My God, if I could do that come March, I would not know what to do with my hands. But yes, Jackson Churio, big fan. You'll probably put some kind of cold water on this, but because he's too young or something. But what do you got on Jackson Churio?
He's a bit young.
Yeah, that's
a bit young. No, I'm kidding. No, I mean, basically a carbon copy season, Jackson Churio. Hit 275 last year, 270 this year. 21 homers both seasons, 22 steals, and then 21 steals. In his first two seasons. So I think, I don't know, you're 17 fewer games. That's right. Although more to plate appearances, which is weird, but either way, I think it's interesting that Churio finished lower than Kyle Tucker. I think anyone who drafted Churio was expecting a step forward, which makes sense given that it was an age 21 season coming off of what Churio did. Previous season, you didn't quite get that, that doesn't mean Churia won't explode again next season. You hear it on podcasts and articles everywhere. Prospect growth is not linear. You could have a major breakout like Churia did in his rookie season. Could stay flat, and maybe the hamstring was part of that. Maybe at the end of the season, if Churia gets that last full month, he does kind of blow 2024 out of the water and get close to earning back where he was drafted. But certainly does not mean like the ceiling for Churia is not any lower, in my opinion, than it was entering 2025. Really good year for an age 21 guy. And yeah, sky's the limit for this dude. So no shade on this youngin from me.
Beautiful, beautiful. Let's talk about another youngin. We'll talk Seattle Mariners on a positive twist tonight. Had an ADP of 13, similar to Jackson Churia, of course. Sixth off the board, finished fourth at the position. That is one of Julio Rodriguez. Dude hit 267 last year, so that's every season. That's his lowest batting average, which is still above average in baseball. Went 32-30 for a second 30-30 season and four straight 2020 season at the age of 24, by the way. And we saw a guy that played, again, 160 games, which is great because he's kind of been a little banged up off and on in a couple of his early seasons. So that was a big plus, Ryan. The dude's just awesome. I know he has his slow starts or whatever, but in a roto league, I debated it was J-Rod and Corbin Carroll for me. For my first pick, I took Corbin. I was really close. I think J-Rod's almost – nothing is safe in baseball, but the way we talk about Francisco Lindor, J-Rod should be in that conversation.
Yeah, agreed. I don't have much to add. I obviously love J-Rod. My kid has a J-Rod jersey, so that tells you all you need to know. I don't really buy the first, second half thing. I know it has happened a couple years in a row now. I just think you draft J-Rod, you get the uber volume that you get with J-Rod, 700 plus plate appearances two of the last three seasons. And you just, at the end of the year, you're going to get 30-30 with a decent batting average. And that's what you want with an early round pick. I think the floor, it's crazy. The floor for a age 24 guy like Julio is just massively high. So I'm guessing Julio did not go too far after Carroll in your draft today, because
after Carroll went Ellie De La Cruz, then went J-Rod went eighth. So yes,
okay. So ADP would probably go up because J-Rod was like, well, I I have the ADP actually in front of me, 13th. So I think the ADP, yeah, will and should go up in 2026.
Should indeed. All right, the seventh outfielder ADP of 14 is Fernando Tatis Jr. Finished sixth of the position. Really strong finish for like a season that, if you just listened to people, felt underwhelming for Tatis. But again, finished sixth. He hit 268 on the year, which is pretty good for Tatis. That's, again, one of his lower numbers, but you'll take 268. 25 homers, 32 steals, so a 25-25 season. 111 runs scored. Played 155 games, the most of his career. I guess that's one of the biggest points to make on this one.
Yep.
I think people just expect more power from Tatis, and that's why they were disappointed.
Probably, and I don't know if that power is coming. I've made this point several times, but the pre 2022 shoulder / PED thing with Tatis, see, he had so much power back in the COVID year in 2021. It just, the barrel rate like has not sniffed that pre injury / suspension level. At this point, I don't think it will. Tatis was my biggest fade in the first round, so this is a complete L for me, seeing Tatis finish sixth at outfield. I just did not bank on, and I probably won't again. I typically don't. It's just my process. I don't bank on someone having a career high plate appearance total. So you kind of hit on the volume. That really is what drove a lot of this with Tatis, is I did not think he could sniff 700 plate appearances. Obviously, I was wrong, but Tatis had only one season of 550 plus plate appearances before 2025 in his career. 691 he spiked in 2025, and that's kind of why you have it. But I think just process wise it's not something I'm gonna say, oh, I was wrong on Tatis, so I'm now going to spend my first round pick on someone who does not have the volume history next season. I'm not gonna do that. So I'll take my L with Tatis, but I don't think I'm gonna kind of do any lessons learned from it, which I don't know, maybe I'm stubborn and old, which I won't argue either.
Neither will I. Something's with that. I'm the most stubborn old guy. I'm rubbing off on you is the problem.
That is the problem. Spent too much damn time with you.
Yeah. Some of the things that stand out with Tatis that I'll mention, and I've kind of heard it because I follow for some reason on a lot of Padres Twitter. He walked almost 13%, which was a career high. Struck out 18.7, career high as well. Extremely patient at the plate this year. Way more patient than usual. You mentioned the barrel rate dropped. Like his X stats, he should have hit 283, not 268. That's a plus. Ground ball rate's up to 49%. It's increased a lot. It keeps going up while the fly ball rate drops, which is obviously not great. But I mentioned the patience part. His swing percentage was down to 45.5%. It's been over 50% for three straight years. It's been a pretty aggressive player at the plate, and it also correlated to a guy that had a – I don't know if it's because he was in a lot of two-strike counts. He's going to have to go even deeper in that regard. But we saw a guy in the fourth percentile of the launch angle sweet spot. So if we're talking power, you want to be in a good launch angle, if that makes sense. When you look at metrics on Savant, he just it felt like he wasn't quite, I guess. He's not the power hitter. He might be one of those guys that needs to be aggressive, is what I'm trying to say. We talk about that a lot with some of these players. His patience might have caught up with him, and maybe that's because he's been playing with the injuries or other factors involved. Very patient hitter this past season, which is not the Tatis profile in recent seasons.
I mean, 25 homers and almost 700 plate appearances, like, honestly, it's fine, but it's not like that much, to be honest.
Not for Tatis standards, especially. Like, yeah. He had 51 barrels, which was the most since 2021, aka steroid season, like you said earlier. And he had 51 because he played in 155 games. So it's just kind of a combination of what are we doing here? So, yeah, I'm with you. It's like a low launch angle. Just to go down the list, it wasn't great by any means. It was good, but not what you want from Fernando Tatis Jr. Like one injury and it turns into, oh, no, what just happened with my guy?
Yes.
Speaking of that, the eighth outfielder off the board with an ADP of 18 finished 148th at the position. And that is Yordan Alvarez, who hit 273 with six home runs, folks. Did steal a base, though. It's a combination. 273 is really bad for what you want from Yordan. Six home runs as well, because only played in 48 games, Ryan. This was just destruction, like bad.
Yeah. How much you can say? I mean, a total lost season. The issue, too, is usually with these lost seasons, it's like you cut this guy when he gets hurt and you move on. Couldn't do that with Yordan, thanks to the, I guess, now relieved of his duties at Astros medical manager, whatever the title is.
He gone.
shouldn't be laughing at job loss, but I'm tired, so whatever. I don't know. Yeah, total gut punch of a season for Yordan Alvarez. I mean, looking forward, this is just all about risk tolerance. It's all about injury. Like, what do you want to do with Yordan? If he stays healthy, he's going to be great. If he doesn't, he's not. I mean, the last month of the season, Yordan Alvarez hit .377 with two homers, 70 plate appearances. The guy can roll out of bed and hit. It's just, will he be healthy? I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully he doesn't roll out of his bed at the same time. He did go at pick 3.9 in my current draft. So you're getting him at a value compared to recent seasons if you want to take that risk.
I mean, that's the case. Is like with any of these guys, someone in pretty much prime age, this is the cheapest you will be able to acquire Yordan Alvarez.
Well, let's see if he's really prime age. With Greg Oden, we thought was prime age too, and similar situations.
I mean, dude is 28. Yordan, he's 28.
Greg Oden was like 23 when he left Ohio State. He looked like he was 64. So
it's my favorite comp, Yordan with Greg Oden.
Yes, it's one of my better moments, I think, on this show.
That's solid.
Yeah. All right. We'll skip over Mookie Betts. He was the ninth outfielder. Jazz Chisholm was the 10th. We've talked about both of them already. Unless you have anything else to add, Ryan.
No, I've taken enough Mookie licks this season. We talked about him on the, I don't know, whatever shortstop. Other position show. Shortstop.
Yes. Yeah. And Jazz was at second and third, so we've talked about them plenty.
Yep.
The 11th outfielder off the board, ADP of 23, so still we're in the first two rounds right now in outfielders. Jarred Duran finished 22nd at the position. a guy that was kind of a tough one to judge going into last season, Ryan, after that career 2024, we hit 21 homers and stole 34 bags while hitting 285. This past season, Jarren Duran hit 16 homers, stole 24 bags, and hit 256. A lot of that took place farther down the lineup, which cut into that plate appearances a little bit. What's your take on this Jarren Duran season? Because I think both of us were kind of not interested last season, and I don't think this helps me get interested.
Agree with you on the first part. Not sure on the second part. We'll see what.
Well, you did draft him already, so I guess you have to say that.
I did draft Jarren Duran in the meatball draft this past August, which was what, 2 months ago. But yeah, this was, I mean, obviously a regression call. I mean, Jarren Duran was a first round player in 2024 and was not being drafted in the first round. So the market knows some pullback was likely. It's that famous regress to what question, and not even from the skills, it's from the plate appearance total, like 731 plate appearances for Jarren Duran last season. Like, that's just very hard to repeat, and got to 696, which is still no kind of small feat, but only 16 homers. Like you said, that's not great. I don't know. I feel like it's a disappointing year for Jarren Duran. I think if you drafted Jarren Duran where you took him at 23 overall, you believed somewhat that last season could stick, that 2024 could stick. And obviously it didn't. That said, Jarren Duran still finished 22nd. So for a quote unquote disappointing encore, still finished as a top 25 outfielder, like did not kill you where you know, if you drafted Jarren Duran, it wasn't a good pick, but it wasn't a death knell or anything like that. So going to be monitoring Jarren Duran's ADP very closely. Cause I think the truth is somewhere in the middle between 2024 and 2025. So I'd rather buy somebody coming off the down part of that than someone coming off the high part of it, as always.
That is totally fair. I want to mention a mistake I made. Yordan Alvarez was taken at round 4, pick 9, not 3-9 in the draft that was just in. So serious drop.
Even better, yeah.
Yeah, with Yordan. Yeah, Duran's just a tough one for me. I don't disagree that he's probably somewhere in the middle. I just feel like we talked about these 2020 guys or some other ones we'll talk about here soon that I feel more confident as 2020. That makes me wonder if I want to take the Jarren Duran plunge, per se.
I get it.
All right, the 12th outfielder off the board, ADP of 27, I was a full fade on this past year. That's Jackson Merrill, finished 64th at the position. Now, to be fair, the fade worked because he was hurt, and I think he played hurt as well. Like, it was a combination of the two. Like, he left, and then he kept pushing himself to come back, and I don't know if he was ever right after his first injury, so I'll give him that benefit of the doubt, 22 years old. Played in 115 games, 16 homers, only one steal, which was tough, but again, the injuries, hit 264. To me, it's a lost season. I think if you believed in him going into last year, you should believe in him going forward. And one reason I didn't like him last year, Ryan, is people were taking him like on the 1-2 turn or almost 2-3 turn now looking at this ADP. But there was a lot of hype behind Jackson Merrill, and I just wasn't going to pay that ADP.
Yeah, I was also not there. But again, this isn't a victory lap. Like a healthy Jackson Merrill could have very well returned that. We don't know. Even a semi-wounded Jackson Merrill still had 44 barrels to only 16 home runs. Like the power was actually better for Jackson Merrill when you look at the barrel rate than it in 2025 than it was in 2024. So a few more K's. Who knows if he's pressing? The biggest concern for me, and again, could very much be injury related, but how do you factor this into a projection next year, is three stolen base attempts all season for Jackson Merrill coming off a 16 steal debut in 2024. That's probably the biggest concern. It's like, yeah, we expect that to rebound, but is this a mid-teen stolen base guy, which would be great, or is this a 8 or 9 stolen base guy or fewer? Maybe he doesn't run anymore. Who knows?
Yeah, I find that last part hard to believe, but who knows is correct. We don't know. And if he's healthy, probably worth it. We'll see if I get back on train, but probably not. Probably not too excited. Plus, when I had Sammy Reed on Talking Padres, he did not give any ringing endorsements to Merrill.
Did not. No.
Kind of supported my thoughts a little bit and completely turned me off of even thinking about drafting him.
Merrill and Xander Bogaerts caught some, not even strays, just direct hits. On
direct.
That
the, like when you're facing your friend and you go, dude, like I've never done it. I see it in movies. Let me clarify that real quick. But there's a dot on you right now. Like you need to be very careful.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it was very direct.
Yes, exactly. All right. One of my most rostered players last season was the 13th outfielder off the board. Finished 37th at the position, had an ADP of 30. So that's not the success you're looking for, technically, at the finishes. But he did hit 241, 22 homers, 22 steals. I think it's more of an indictment on 73 runs scored and 62 RBIs. Like the average you'd like better, but the 135 runs and RBIs combined, you expect a lot more from Wyatt Langford in that regard with the overall production from Mr. Langford. It was not there in 134 games, not to mention the constant injuries he had as well. So this was a bummer. I appreciated the 2020 season. Again, 22 years old, another young guy, but down year for what I expected from Wyatt Langford.
And some of that not his fault. I mean, the Rangers lineup was just so bad. Yep. You had a bad Seager year. You had a bad Semien year. You had Berger out for quite a bit. So I don't know. By far the cloud for me with Wyatt Langford is three separate oblique strains.
Yeah.
And different obliques. He doesn't have three obliques, but he strained his left oblique twice. He strained his right oblique in April. I don't know, man. Like those aren't fluky things for me. I can't. Like I don't even know, or honestly, really care what the price is on Wyatt Langford next season. You have that type of recurring thing for soft muscle and in your core. Like that's I don't want to go all Dr. Dave on anybody, but that's a major red flag for me. I'll ask Dr. Dave at first pitch what he thinks of why Langford. I'm sure we'll get a passionate response, but I agree with what I think he will say.
Yeah, we saw Langford drop to 6.8 in this draft. Quite the fall from last.
Yeah, I don't even know. Like, sure, I mean the upside. This is a top three overall fantasy prospect, and again, like you said, I mean, coming off a 2020 season, age 23, and what we think is a down year. So I get the ceiling aspect. It's just early round pick for someone with that injury history already is tough for me.
All right, O'Neal Cruz. We talked about the shortstop position. He's just not. It's more impressive he hit 200 and still had 20-30
age. I know. Yeah. It's the DGAF line. Just
yeah,
whatever. Just run whenever you get on base.
The 15th outfielder off the board with an ADP of 42, and that's pretty impressive. Our ADP of 45 finished 42nd at the position. Doesn't just that he's better than 42nd with the position. It's the fact he missed a chunk of the season due to injury. So the fact that someone took him at the end of round three, A, kudos to you. Because if you held on to him, Ronald Acuna Jr. played 95 games, hit 290, 21 homers and 9 steals, scored 74 runs over that stretch, walked over 17% of the time. Like, he was, as advertised, maybe he didn't run as much as others did. I don't think many of us thought he would run that much after that injury. But all in all, Ronald Acuna Jr. looked freaking awesome last year. And he's another guy that's going to – he went right after Julio in the draft. He went at the 9th pick in the first round. And that might be a discount when we talk about this next year.
Yeah, could be. The thing with Acuna that we'll never know is just how many steals is he going to have. Like, I mean, the dude swiped 75 in 2023. Only one other season above 30 in his career. So, like, who the hell knows? But, yeah, Ronald Acuna, you know, for all the kind of off-season workout videos, and he's going to come back here, he's going to make a push for opening day, ended up missing about 2 months. So May 23rd was the return date to the majors. And, yeah, I don't think you can be – I think you, in an ideal situation, wanted more bags from Acuna, but everything else looked very good for – Ronald Acuna. I still don't understand the 2023 season. Not just the stolen bases for Acuna, the K rate. Like that sticks out so much to me for how little Ronald Acuna struck out in 2023 and how much he has struck out in other seasons. But yeah, I totally get if you want to take that first round plunge, and you're gonna have to in 2026. I get it for Acuna. Yes, there's an injury pass, but he looked pretty damn healthy over the last 4 months of the season.
Yes, he did. Very impressive stuff there. I don't know what proper word to use here without being disrespectful of our next player, but I'm going to leave him on the floor. 16th outfielder off the board, ADP of 47s. We've entered around four of these drafts. Finished 35th at the position, better than Wyatt Langford. This gentleman hit 249 and went 20-20 for the first time in his career. He's been so close a couple times, but basically end of the season where he left off other seasons minus the batting average. Still seems like but he's also played the most games by far of his entire career. So I'll just put that caveat out there.
Hey,
Michael Harris II. Ryan, what are your thoughts here? Because this is hashtag your guy.
It is. I told the Discord no Michael Harris questions, but I figured he would come up anyway. For all the trials, tribulations, my quote-unquote guy finished 35th out of 16. So not good, but for as rough as things were for much of the season for Michael Harris, I don't know. I guess he salvaged things slightly. The problem is, like, it's that ultimate gif. Like, once I thought I was out, pull me back in. After August 1st, for Michael Harris, he hit 278, 11 homers, 8 steals. The last week of the season, I think he had 2 homers and 3 steals? No, 3 homers and 4 steals in the last week of the season. Just to kind of screw with us even more.
Screw with you.
Screw with me. I know you've sworn him off forever, but still intertwined with Michael Harris. I don't know, man. It's the same crap we've dealt with in previous seasons, long stretches of nothing, and then he looks like Corbin Carroll for a week, and then he goes back to being horrendous again. I don't know how you project that for a player over a season. I have no idea. He's 24.
I was just about to say, he's way too young for you too to be this enamored by him.
I don't know, man. Yeah, I guess I don't know. I'm under a spell or something.
Oh jeez.
But pretty much has been 20-20 guy every season of his career with good batting average. This is the lowest batting average of Michael Harris's career. First two seasons, 297, 293, went 20-20 pretty much in those first two seasons. Just like
pretty much that counts.
He missed by a homer and then two homers.
I know.
I'm rounding up for my guy. This is why I don't like this. He
played 160 games this year, way more than he's ever played, and still barely got to 20-20.
Yeah, and I do wonder about the games played. Michael Harris, I mean, his OBP wasn't great against righties either, but 265 OBP against lefties, like it's
not good.
Could see a platoon here at some point.
Yes, now we're starting to cook. Okay, anything else you got on the negative side of things? Want to keep going or
dude, like a seventh, eighth round Michael Harris? Let's go. I'm back in.
I bet he's still on the board. He's still on the
board. It's a top 35 outfielder, man.
We just started round 7 and Michael Harris is still on the board. So
click it. You going to click?
No.
Come on. You need more.
I stand by my comments. Ooh. That will not be happening. Not up in here.
I mean, so do I, but usually I'm wrong.
You're right and I'm wrong. Is that what you're going to go with?
Usually I was wrong with Harris for sure.
Yeah. All right. The next one. This is a tough one. James Wood, 17th outfielder off the board, ADP of 53. Finished 13th at the position. Dude hit 256, 31 home runs, 15 steals, 94 RBIs, 87 runs scored, and a whopping 32.1% strikeout rate. He struck out a ton this season. And most impressively, or importantly, the second half just demise, where he hit 223 compared to 278 and only had 7 of his 31 home runs, Ryan. That concerns 3 of his 15 steals. That concerns me a lot. Like, is this one of those he was playing hurt situations, or like, how do you become that lost at the plate over a full half of the season?
Yeah, normally that wouldn't concern me very much, except this was James Wood's first full season in the majors. So I do wonder, like, is the book out? I don't know what that book is, but pitching coordinators and pitching staffs in the majors are much smarter than me. That's the one thing. If James Wood was like a 6-7 year veteran, had a horrible second half, not worried about it. Jose Ramirez, you remember 5-6 years ago, had a horrendous second half and just went back to being Jose Ramirez. But so that's the only thing, is like, is not only just the second half fade, but it is a ton of K's. Like, there is a, and it's the flip side of that. It's wildly impressive for James Wood to hit 31 home runs with a 26% fly ball rate. Like, that's a real, that's a lot of ground balls.
Josh Bell, baby,
to hit 31. This is a tough, I don't know. I need to dig deeper into James Wood. Like, there could very much be an O'Neill Cruz without the steals.
Yeah.
Type of outcome here. I certainly don't hope that, but the strikeouts, the ground balls looks pretty similar to me. So I don't know.
He was a round three pick in our draft. So
it feels a little too pricey for me.
Yeah. And then looking more at his splits, first half strikeout 27.6%, second half 39% strikeout rate.
This goes to point, like, did something get figured out with James Wood?
Yeah, I'm just trying to look at a few other things here. Lefty righty splits are pretty much down the road, so, like, ideal, like, similar. So that's not it. But also, you mentioned the ground ball rates, 50.2% in the first half, 49% in the second half. But what I really see is first half 32.4% home run to fly ball, 26% home run to fly ball. So that's a massive drop as well. I'm with you. I'm curious to see what other things come up with him, I guess.
That first half pace is,
it's tough to keep up with, but
it's very tough to keep up with.
But that drop's also,
that drop is also probably lower than, yeah. So I don't know.
All right. The Law Dog, ADP of 18, or the 18th off the board, ADP of 57, finished 40th at the position, and this was a rough year for the Law Dog. He looked like there was a window where he was coming back, then it kind of disappeared again. He started getting platooned. It was all over the board, bad at the bottom of the order. Lawrence Butler finished the season hitting .234, 21 homers, 22 steals, so 2020 season, which was nice, played in 152 games. Just a massive drop off from what we saw in that breakout 2024 season.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing with it was the drop in batting average. I mean, to hit .234 is tough. And to not only do that, but a lot more whiffs from Lawrence Butler in year two. The swing strike went up from 11.5 up to 14, and the strikeouts went up like 5 points up to 28%. That's not great, Bob, for Lawrence Butler. And, like, you weren't expecting a ton of power, but you were hoping for more than 21 homers in that park. I was thrown out 7 times on those 22 steals, so not the most efficient base stealer either. This felt like a, I don't want to say a pretty easy regression call from 2024, but you factor in the issues against lefties. I mean, Lawrence Butler was pretty much a platoon player by the end of the season. I don't know. Not great. Not great.
Very tepid on 2026 drafting Lawrence Butler right now. The 19th outfielder off the board also had an ADP of 57, finished 38th at the position. So very similar to the Law Dog. That is Teoscar Hernandez. .247 average, 25 home runs. The big thing, though, 65 runs scored, 89 RBIs, only played in 134 games. Massive drop-off for one of the most consistent hitters in baseball.
And probably my favorite, not only outfield target entering 2025, my favorite hitter in the entire player pool entering 2025 was Teoscar Hernandez, and going to be stubborn and old yet again. I don't think the skills are actually that bad. Groin injury in May, so yeah, missed some time there. You expect more than 65 runs in that lineup, but I don't know, man. I look at still a really good barrel rate. I look at a BABIP for Teoscar that is roughly 60 points lower than it was over his previous 3 seasons. I think that comes back up. I think this is a .270 hitter, and with a .270 batting average, he is on the Dodgers again next season, right?
Yes.
I believe so. Give me a second. But anytime your batting average comes back up to like .270 in a lineup like that, I think it's going to be a good thing. So entering old age 33 right in the wheelhouse. I for sure will be back in on Teoscar. Edited his forecaster box about a week ago, and it honestly, to me, it checked out pretty well.
Yep, he's there in LA through 2027. So okay. Get that going for you.
Yep.
All right, Brent Rooker, another great season from Brent Rooker, the 20th outfielder off the board, ADP of 65, so we've entered round five of your drafts. Finished 18th at the position, so we're back to another good finisher right here. Brent Rooker hit 262. You expected regression from 293. That was normal. Third straight 30 home run season. We saw six stolen bases, 89 RBIs, 92 run score, which is serviceable. You'd hope for more RBIs, especially in that ballpark, but overall, a really good season. Massive drop off in strikeouts, down to 22.2%.
Yep.
So good stuff from Brent Rooker. He'll be obviously playing in that wonderful ballpark again next year.
Yeah, kind of a nice year for Brent Rooker. I think the big thing looking back is I don't know when Rooker, I mean, he was drafted as UT only. I don't recall when he actually got outfield eligibility. It was at some point, obviously, during the season because he's on this list. But you took a little bit of a plunge there having to take Rooker at and stick him in utility for at least a decent chunk of the season, I think. So, yep. I don't know. Yeah, a fine. Everyone knew regression was coming. That was pretty much a certainty. But Brent Rooker did just fine, finishing as a top. You can regress down and still be a top 20 outfielder. I would say that's pretty damn good. And like you said, super impressive to improve that strikeout rate for the second year in a row, down to 22%. Like that's impressive. Cost him some power to get there, but still had 65 barrels on 30 homers. Like this is very much a legitimate 30 homer bat, and honestly could hit better than 262 next year.
Agreed. Completely agreed. All right. The 21st outfielder off the board finished 25th at the position. He finished sixth at second base, by the way. And that is Jose Altuve. We talked about him a couple episodes ago. I got nothing really else to add here.
No, I don't. Yeah, the only thing I was going to add that I didn't mention on the second base episode is, and this is probably obvious to folks, but just to put some numbers behind it, a 56% pull rate for Jose Altuve. That's something that doesn't get factored into things like barrels and exit velocity, that sort of thing. I believe that was the highest pull rate of any hitter in baseball last season. So I think when you pull the ball that much for Jose Altuve, that is how you get to 26 home runs with admittedly mediocre raw power. So
agreed.
Throw that out there.
All right. The 22nd outfielder off the board, ADP of 75. So the tail end of round six, finished 73rd at the position. We talked about it a lot last year on Bloom Boards, Brenton Doyle. A guy that finished hitting 233, 15 homers, 18 steals, but a guy that had a lot going on. We talked about in the on shows, especially in the first half with the family, personal stuff. Second half, we saw him hit 282 compared to 202. The power, 8 homers compared to 7. Steals are pretty similar as well, but we saw that batting average jump a ton in the second half, and he's a big-time target of mine coming up in 2026.
I think so too, just because I don't think the skills really dropped off that far. It is, and this is a kind of a word of caution, is using kind of arbitrary endpoints. And I mean, I've mentioned Brenton Doyle's second half plenty of times. The second half looks great. Brenton Doyle, if you dig even further, in September hit 175 with one home run. So
yeah, that's not good.
Limp to the finish. It was pretty much all July and August where Brenton Doyle was good again. But hey, at least he was really good again for 2 months. That at least shows that there's a pretty good sign for 2026. So very rough year for Brenton Doyle on off the field, and certainly for fantasy if you took him. I mean, just the numbers there, right? 22, taking him at the number 22 outfielder and finishing 73rd. Like that is that's tough. You think you have a decent four category outfielder, and you instead have nothing.
Yep, totally agree with you on that one. The 23rd outfielder was Cody Bellinger. We'll pass on that one unless you have more to add. We talked about him at first base.
Yep, love what he did last year.
Number 11th in the outfield, which is really good.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's talk about another guy that I had a lot of shares of this past season. The 24th outfielder off the board, Seiya Suzuki. Finished 24th of the positions. I guess in theory, we should be okay with what took place here. But I think we all had much higher expectations for Seiya Suzuki. He hit 245 on the year, which is a massive drop off from what we're used to in the 280s with Seiya. Did hit 32 home runs, which is by far a career high. Only 5 steals, which I guess outside of his outlier last season is about right. 103 RBIs. So overall, a really good season. I think we wanted that higher batting average from Seiya. And that kind of, I think, limited his total, like, kind of boom season.
and should have had a higher batting average. A lot harder contact in 2025, a lower strikeout rate in 2025 than in 2024 when Saya hit 283. It was a 90-point drop in BABIP from 370 last year in 2024, admittedly way above his head, down to 282 this season, yet also made a ton more hard contact, a career high barrel rate by quite a wide margin. So this could have been an even better season, in my opinion, than Seiya Suzuki. I think a legit 30-35 homer bat, I think he can get back to 270. Would have been really nice if he did that in 2025, because that would have helped a lot of your squads, at least, yes. Bubba. But still, you got equal value if you took Seiya Suzuki finishing 24th, and that's where you took him. So can't complain too much, but this could have been a lot better for sure.
Agreed. And again, I will shocker be interested in 2026.
Yep.
Luis Robert Jr. is a 25th outfielder off the board with an ADP of 90, finished 60th at the position. That is not great, Bob. 223 average, back-to-back 223, 224 seasons. Only 14 homers, back-to-back seasons. 33 steals was nice, but again, 110 games after 100 games. It's a matter of he's going full Byron Buxton right now.
Is that a good thing? It was a good thing this year.
No, I'm talking about the usual Byron. Like, he's going to get hurt and what could have been a lot of those type of situations with the Lou Bob.
I think a really high stolen base floor. Like, 33 steals is pretty damn impressive. Cut down the K rate quite a bit, too, and power was good. I don't know. I don't – talking myself back in with Lou Bob. I'm shocked he's still on the White Sox. Absolutely
Yeah. Shocked. I'm not, I should be shocked, but then I'm like, oh, it's the White Sox. So it kind of checks out with poor baseball decisions, is the way I kind of foreshadow that. And then we're going to power through these last five here, Ryan, to make your Bloom board easier to make for the next episode. Christian Yelich was the 26th outfielder off the board, finished 10th at the position. Side note, will not be an outfielder to start the season for an FBC because he only played 19 games at the position. So keep that one in your back pocket when you're drafting. Missed it by one, would have had it, but then a rainout, I believe, got him scratched, and then he went back to hurting again. Yelich had a really good season. He was like his back, so he went back to DHing. They wouldn't put him in the outfield. Inning 264, 29 home runs, most home runs since 2019, 16 steals, 103 RBIs. Just Yelich continues to be really, really good at the plate. Just a bummer. He'll be util only.
Bummer he'll be UT only, but still a hell of a season for Christian Yelich. If we think back, it was all about the back. It was all about the injuries. This was Christian Yelich, whose back had been barking for years and finally got surgery to hopefully correct it. Still was kind of barking a little bit, but to get this line, to get 264, 29 homers, 16 bags at an ADP at 99, that is a massive value.
All righty, Mike Trout, ADP of 101, 27th outfielder off the board, finished 56th of the position, played 130 games. That's the most he's played since 2019, but only 10 home runs, 6 steals, and hit 220. He hit 26 home runs. I was looking at the wrong one. Played 130 games, 26 home runs, 2 steals, hit 232. So we got a little more power, which was nice, Ryan, but overall, the 32% K rate makes me think age and injuries have really, really caught up with Mike Trout.
Agreed. What do you think Mike Trout's ADP would have been if you had said before the season he's going to play 130 games? That's his most since 2019.
Yeah, he would have gone in the top 50, I'd imagine. Yeah.
Overall? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so too. This 101 ADP for Trout was a complete injury hedge. I think if you give Trout 130 games before the season, could be, I mean, top 30, who knows, but yeah, big step back for Trout. I should probably do a Bloom board on this in terms of biggest changes in strikeout rate from year to year. Trout has to be one of the worst in baseball. Yes. Yep. 32% K rate this year, 21% last year. God, that's struck bad. Out all the time, and that's why you hit 232 despite still having plus power. But man, 32% K rate is horrendous and a career worse for Mike Trout.
And he, let me check one more thing because I believe it's the case. He did get 22 games in the outfield, so he will be outfield eligible. Because I'm right, like, I know he DH'd a lot.
Yeah, a bunch. So. Yeah, which is probably how we got to 130 games.
Yep, yep. Anthony Santander, 28th off the board, finished 209th, basically missed the – he played a whopping 54 games this year, six homers, 175. I don't have a whole lot on a lost season.
Yeah, not much to say at all. This is a nightmare scenario where you pick someone in basically the top 100 picks and they literally barely even play for you. So tough break if you have Santander. Still kind of messed up. Like was taken off the ALCS roster.
Which I believe means he cannot be on the World Series roster.
Cannot be on the World Series roster. Exactly. Yep. Mariners could have used Santander playing in the ALCS, but
he wouldn't have been hitting in George Springer's spot, so it wouldn't have mattered. He's going to try to.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a good point.
Yeah. Brian Reynolds, 29th outfielder off the board, finished 63rd at the position. Brian Reynolds at 245. That's a massive drop from what you hope from him. 16 home runs was he had four straight seasons of at least 24 home runs.
Yeah.
Three steals. The decline was real in that age 30 season.
Yeah, this was super surprising to me. Brian Reynolds is on one of the topics for our player spotlight hitters is stable track record and entering 2025 and then completely fell apart. So I'm interested to see what the panel thinks of Brian Reynolds, because this was my guy for obvious reasons. Consistency, age, the reliability for Brian Reynolds was absolutely there. And then all of a sudden you do this. So I don't know. Tough year. More Ks. Not enough power. 16 home runs, terrible lineup. That's the kind of the hidden killer here. If for Brian Reynolds is 68 runs and 73 RBI, which is three steals, like that's three categories that are pretty damn horrendous. And then you tack on 245 batting average. I guess all five categories were horrendous. So there we go. Yeah,
that's rough. That's rough. It's not a great year, Ryan, for Brian Reynolds. Last one, number 30. Brian Reynolds, I said. Oh, Ryan Reynolds, I got you. Yeah, he was great, Van Wilder. Dylan Cruz, the 30th outfielder off the board, ADP of 112, finished 115th at the position. Oof. Dylan Cruz played in 85 games. That's more than I thought he did. 10 homers, 17 steals. Like, honestly, if you said, okay, 85 games, okay, I'll take that. Dude hit 208, scored 43 runs, drove in 27. The 10 and 17 is not bad. The 208 is, and the counting stats are not great at all.
The 208's bad, but it was 246 bad, but like some bad luck there. But hey, I mean, we're recapping 2025. That bad luck counts, and it was brutal for Dylan Cruz. Very concerned about the power outlook for Cruz. Just so many ground balls. It was over 50% ground ball rate. And like, yeah, he's got decent power, but it's not enough to kind of do what James Wood did and hit 30 home runs despite a very high ground ball rate. So I don't know. I kind of chalk this up as a lost season. Nice that Dylan Cruz is still running a ton. That is good. That is the kind of the Nationals way. So you like that, but many more obstacles, I think, for Dylan Cruz that it's a flaws that came out this year.
Completely agreed. All right, it's the top 30 outfielders off the board in 2025. Final thoughts on this board. We'll do some listener questions, and we'll get to maybe the next 30, 40, 31 through 60 on Tuesday.
Now, overall, pretty solid. Only a couple massive duds. Michael C. in the chat says, Seiya Suzuki reminds me of makes me think of Riley Green, who I think is missing here, / went near Suzuki. Riley Green is first up on the next show. He was the 31st outfielder taken. But yeah, I think a pretty decent comp there. I like Seiya more, but for some reason I'm against Riley Green. I don't know why. I need to look inward. Look inward there.
Step one, look inward.
Step one, yeah.
All right, let's get to some listener questions in the old Discord here. Our buddy Martin Sikulski says, why do people continue to draft O'Neal Cruz? He's the Tamu Eli. I agree completely.
Agree with that. Yeah, very smart people still like O'Neal Cruz. So who am I to say? But yeah, brutal batting average outlook, brutal playing time outlook with lefties, brutal team. It's a lot of brutal for someone still being drafted. Has he been taken? Has O'Neal Cruz been taken in your 50?
Yeah, he was taken. He was taken round 6, pick 10. Okay. So two picks after Wyatt Langford.
Huh. Neither, I guess, for me.
70th pick overall.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah, I think it's the reason why people still like O'Neal. It's the obvious, like, the power, like, you see him hit the ball 120 miles an hour. The speed's there. It's like, if he could ever pull his head out of his rear end and hit, like, 240, what could be? It's like the same thing we say with Ellie, but Ellie actually does it. That's the difference between the two.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot to like potentially about O'Neal, but now you're talking about potential platoons, the attitude, valid concerns after what we saw this year. That could change things a lot as well.
Yep.
BP says in 2023, Acuna was 2 years removed from a knee surgery. In 2026, he'll be two. Does he go off again next year? I think he's in for a very nice year. It's just like Ryan said, how many steals? Because he flat out said, I need to steal less bases. Like he said, he needs to run less. That was his own words. Now, was that just for 2025, or is he talking long term? To be determined. I think it's long term. I think he's a realist and says, okay, I need to be on the freaking field. But I still think he has I wouldn't be shocked if we see 40 home runs from, like, he's that good.
The anti-Mason win quotes, I want to steal fewer bases. Yeah, I think the stolen base projection for Acuna is the hardest, but yeah, I think does he go off again in terms of BP's question? I think he absolutely could. And I still think Acuna could steal 30 bags and not push it. So,
like, I like this. I like to think 40-20 is definitely in the cards for 2026. Sure. And that might be just a floor with him. SN Schwartz 4 says, are we drafting the first half James Wood or the second half James Wood, or are we splitting the difference? Basically, tell me what the heck to do with James Wood. That is the $1 million question.
That is the $1 million questions. Probably projection systems are going to split the difference because that's what they do. But as we talked about earlier with James Wood, I'm just concerned about the second half downfall, given now that there's a book on him, and the strikeout rate for me is just very hard to get over. So if I had to lean which half for James Wood, I would lean the second half, not as good Wood.
All right. Steve Stoughton says, thoughts on Jackson Merrill and Dylan Cruz for 2026. I think both could be solid values in draft and holds. Could be. Ryan just mentioned his Dylan Cruz concerns, which are 100% valid. Jackson Merrill, I'd be more interested in just because I said I think he was hurt so much. I'm not the biggest Jackson Merrill guy, but at the discount, quote-unquote discount, you appear to be getting right now, I'd be more interested.
Yeah, and that's the thing I'm not sure about for 2026. I mean, we don't have ADP yet, so I don't know. But in a vacuum, I like the Jackson Merrill profile much more than I do the Dylan Cruz profile. But I have a hunch Merrill will be more expensive than Cruz as well. So it's tough to answer right now, but more confident in a Merrill value than Dylan Cruz.
Mailman Mike says, what are we doing with Law Dog next year, buy or sell? I'm currently probably selling.
Yeah, I don't know the ADP, so it's tough. I don't know. You still got a guy coming off a down year who went 20-20 in the Great Park, and I think pretty safe playing time, at least against righties. So I would be inclined to buy if the price drops quite a bit from Butler's 57 ADP, which I expect that it would.
We've made 72 picks, and he is still on the board at the moment.
That's fair.
Which he should be. He should be.
Yeah. Yep.
Michael Cicchini says, Springer, underlying looks legit, but he has bad in 2024, and he'll be 36 and a half years old. Is he a top 20 outfielder? Should he be? We will, on that note, this is called a cliffhanger. We will answer that question and more next Tuesday night when the number 3 overall outfielder from the 2025 season and the guy that helped the Blue Jays get to the World Series will be discussed on this show.
Yeah, I'm still on a moratorium analyzing George Springer, so we're gonna need to do that next week.
And on that note, that wraps up part one of the outfield preview. Once again, any final thoughts, Ryan, before we head on out for the weekend?
Freaking George Springer. It's my only thought.
Yeah. All right, we will wrap it up right there. Make sure y'all follow Ryan on the Twitter at RyanBHQ. You can send him some virtual flowers and some Kleenex when he watches Game 1 of the World Series on Friday night.
Or just a couple beers. That's fine, too.
That's true. You can find the podcast on Twitter at Bubba Bloom Pod and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Entrick. Beat LA. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 288. Catch y'all next time.